sahanavavatu, sahanaubhunaktu, sahavīryam karavāvahai, tejasvinavadhitamastu mā vidviṣāvahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Well, okay. So we do 53.
Yeah.
Ittam vakyaistadartha
anusandhanam shravanam bhavet,
anusandhanam shravanam bhavet,
yuktya sambhavitatva,
yuktya sambhavitatva,
anusandhanam mananantu tat,
anusandhanam mananam tu tat.
Repeat to me. Ittam.
Ittam.
Vakyaihi.
Vakyaihi.
Tad.
Tad.
Artha.
Artha.
Anusandhanam.
Anusandhanam.
Shravanam.
Shravanam.
Bhavet.
Bhavet.
Yuktya.
Yuktya.
Sambhavitatva.
Sambhavitatva.
Anusandhanam.
Anusandhanam.
Mananam. Mananam. Well, break the sentence. Mananam.
Mananam.
Tutat.
Tutat.
So after having given these three or four verses, I guess, doing some manana, bringing in the Vaisheshikas in their position, just to give you an experience of manana. Now he's just in a very brief fashion giving you a definition of shravanam and mananam, because now we've been really through both. It's not that these few verses by Purvapacha Siddhanta, the Vaisheshikas, in this argument, that's just an example of shravana when you're analyzing a different philosophical discipline. And you'll find this type of manana throughout all of Shankara's bhashyas, not just the Brahma Sutras, but all the way through. He'll say, so-and-so will say, and you're supposed to know who that is, actually. You're supposed to know it's a Vaisheshika or the Nyayikas or the Bauda. You should know that. He often doesn't even tell you, but there'll be a footnote that will tell you. So this type of analysis is hard for us. It's hard for me because, as I was kind of explaining, when we're talking about in India about debates, both sides are very well informed. They have to be. So otherwise their objections and everything are kind of meaningless, because they don't basically know what they're talking about. And since they have a value for moksha, and that's kind of the highest end for all of these different darshanas, it really matters to them. And in fact, if someone feels that they have lost the debate and are won over by the other side, so to speak, they will actually convert over there, because their interest is in knowledge. Another thing, just a few asides about this, since we had this little example. all of the darshanas that are based in the astikas, that are based in the Vedas, one thing they have in common is that they see knowledge as liberation. Knowledge is liberation. They may have different ideas about what that knowledge is. Or even, I'm talking about even how knowledge takes place, or looking at perhaps the practice of samadhi, or being able to have samadhi, that is not itself is the knowledge. And so with the Yoga Sutras, you have to actually reach that experience of samadhi in order to differentiate the purusha, which is very similar to the Atma, except that there's many of them. Many things are not similar too, but just as pure conscious being. Their intent is to have the mind form an what we call an anuvritti, a flow of consciousness, a flow of vrittis, into the self with no impediments, no lack of vairagya or anything to stop that natural flow, no impurities, you know, and no raga dvesha, that's all vairagya is taken over, so that that flow of vrittis just go into the self and you abide there in samadhi without much impetus to come out. They use the example of, that's in the Sankhya, they use the example of, you know, the Prakriti bowing down, having done her job, having done her dance for the Purusha, has finished the dance and now pranams, the flat pranam, not to get up again. And then the person who's considered liberated at that time is one who just simply abides as the Purusha without any input coming from the Prakriti. That's different, you know. But what is the same, I'm saying, in all of these different darshanas, knowledge, it is knowledge itself that is liberation, and ignorance is the cause of our suffering. And so in the end, the basic idea for all of these darshan is you're fine. There's no problem for you, for yourself at all. The problem is because of ajnanam, self-ignorance, that causes us, these upadis, these Vedanta, these mitya upadis, to get into so much trouble. It's not that self is not getting into any trouble at all. I'm fine. Conscious being is fine. For it, there is no ajnanam either. It illumines ajnanam. It has no ajnanam. It has no ignorance. It illumines ignorance. Ignorance belongs to maya. And so, it's a common denominator. There's another common, knowledge and ignorance. The problem of knowledge and ignorance is self-knowledge and self-ignorance. Self-ignorance being the cause for bondage. Self-knowledge being really the cause for moksha, for liberation. You know, there's that common denominator, and we have to remember also that all of these darshanas come out of the same field of experience or the same basic belief system, because they're all Vedic. Even if they're not, even if they don't accept the Vedas as a means of knowledge, they've all come out of that. They've all come out of that culture, you know. You know, it's just kind of, and so certain things, when you are born into a culture that's kind of been the same for thousands and thousands of years, certain things that are accepted as absolute facts in that culture are not even questioned because you're born into that. You don't even think about it. Like, for instance, reincarnation is one. The cyclical nature of the creation is another. That's also very common in most darshanas. The reincarnation, the cyclical nature of the creation, that there is moksha, that it even exists, that there's a guru-sisha relationship. We don't happen to have anything like that. That moksha is fundamental. You know, it's what in the end, you know, in the end there's a way out. You know, that there is a solution to these problems. I'm just not interested in it right now, but at least in the back of my mind, I know that such a thing is there. There's pranayama, there's meditation, there's yoga. There's all of these things are very, very ancient. You know, and there's astrology, Jyotish, there's Ayurveda. All of these things are so ancient and they're still alive and living. And they're shared by all of the different darshanas. You know, the Vedas are shared by all of the astikas, those who accept them as a pramana. And the gnostikas that don't accept the Vedas as a pramana, means as an authority, they're still have been born into it. And so you'll see, like with the Bauddha, with the Buddha, and with the Buddha, the Jains, and with all of them, when they're talking about the reality, they're talking about the Vedic reality. You know, it's like in Christianity we say something. If somebody calls themselves an atheist, you have to say, "What is the God you don't believe in?" And so here in these different darshanas, they already have a very ancient, maybe beginningless, Vedic understanding of the nature of the creation. You know, the different parts of it. That's already there. And so they're not coming up with something new that's really non-Vedic. They're just dealing with it a little differently. Like the Buddha accepts reincarnation, just for an example, the Buddha accepts reincarnation. Not because he's a Gnostica. The Buddha doesn't accept the Vedas at all. You know? But he accepts reincarnation because he had kind of a mystical experience of a higher loka where he was able to kind of experience and see that there is reincarnation and how all of that works. So he had some sort of an experience which he took as a real experience. And because of that, he said, yes, there is reincarnation. But not because the Vedas say so, but because of his experience. And his followers, the Bauddha, the followers accept that there is reincarnation because they accept what he says, you know, as Shabda Pramana. It's Shabda, it's his words. And you say that the person, you have Shraddha in the person who is speaking those words. Like if you, just in as a common example, if you go up and, like in India's words, you go up and you see somebody, you know, walking along the street, or one of these guys who's driving, what do you call these little go-kart things that pull you around? And you, but yeah, rickshaw. So you ask for directions, you know, and you want to be careful who you pick to ask for those directions, because they all want to please you, whether they know or not, but they still want to be able to tell you. So to accept the directions and to actually follow them, you have to have Shraddha in that, you know, faith in that person, you know. And so if somebody's, for instance, somebody's not a Buddhist, just because the Buddha said doesn't mean that you believe that. The same with the Vedas. Just because the Vedas say, or just because the Upanishads are saying this or are unfolding something, you don't have to accept that at all. And why would you? Why would you accept any religion or any shastra, you know, or any like the Bible or the Vedas or anything like that, unless for some reason there's a Shraddha there that gives you the heart and the desire also to do that, to study that. So it's an amazing thing. Anyway, so here he wants to introduce these two, because we have Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasa, important terms, because these terms, Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana, are what we call Upayanishta. Upayanishta means this is really the means for gaining knowledge. You know, Shravana means you're exposing yourself to this teaching through a teacher for a good period of time until all of those Upanishads and all of those texts have been covered, really, and understood. That's Shravana. Manana is needing a logical explanation of those things that are unfolded in the Vedas, in the Upanishads, even though that logic also is included. But it is what allows your mind to be able to say, yeah, that's the way it is. That's how it is. I see that clearly. It can't be another way. That's yukti. That's logic. But that logic depends upon what you've understood and seen at the time of teaching. Then you apply that logic. You apply it to your own. You need some logic to kind of verify the experience and the understanding you've had from the Shravana. And then you have to be able to apply that logic, your logic, to other schools of thought also. Why aren't they right? What if they're saying something so different, like in the Vaisheshika, because everything's made of these little indivisible atoms that come into manifestation in a way that is similar to Panchikarana. But they're still little individual partless atoms at the bottom of everything. That's different. So why can't it be just little individual atoms? And why can't this whole creation be just Saguna Brahman, as we were arguing? Why not? Why? What's the problem with that? You know? So your mind, like if this particular school says this, then our mind is kind of, at least a Western mind or my mind, I've read it, I'm reading it there, that must be the truth. We have a book. You read the book, you know, and it's supposed to be a good book, and so what they say must be the truth. You know? Wow. Mm-hmm. We have to stop that. And just in general, you have to still read what you read with Viveka. You know, with Trump's fake news, you have to be careful. Okay, so here's just a quick, easy definition of shravana and manana. So first he says, ittam means, in this manner, means we've covered this. We've done so much of this has been shravana and now manana. He says, thus, in this manner, vakyaihi, by the vakyas, by the statements of the shruti and the mahavakya, but not just that, the tetvamasa yadi vakyaihi. The tetvamasi type the mahavakyas, we can just talk about those in reference to this text because they are what in the end contain the knowledge. The mahavakya is the knowledge. And so, just to make this clear, say if you have tet, twam, asi. That you are. Tet, that, twam, you, asi, you are. That's the mahavakya. The whole knowledge of the Upanishads is contained in this mahavakya. But to understand that mahavakya, that you are that, means you are Ishvara, you have to have a thorough understanding of what we mean by tet, and what we mean by twam, and what we mean by asi as an identity. Because otherwise, tet twam asi, you are that, what does that mean? Nothing. It will not work unless all of these words are totally unfolded. And so that's why an Upanishad is just not a Mahavakya standing there by itself. There's a tremendous amount of supporting vakyas that go into the understanding of tet twam asi so it can work as a Mahavakya. Right? And so the understanding has to be both on the vacharta, on the immediate meaning of tet and twam, and then on the laksharta, the implied meaning. Because otherwise, how could you accept it? You are Ishvara. I mean, of course I'm not Ishvara. But even to say, of course I'm not Ishvara, I have to know what's meant by the you and by that. You are Ishvara. No, I'm not. What do you mean by you? You know. Well, what do you mean by Ishvara? And how am I Ishvara? So all you can imagine, just think about it, how much unfoldment is necessary in order to make this Mahavakya actually work. And then when all of that is done, so that the Mahavakya actually, you can actually see and recognize the truth of it. And because all of this is here right now, everything the Mahavakya is talking about is here. But it takes a tremendous amount of analysis and clarity for that Mahavakya and backup knowledge for it to work. So that's the process of Shravanam. And it's the unfoldment, the very systematic, using all of the Kriyas, the very systematic unfoldment of the Mahavakya, which stands for the essential, what called Tatparya, the essential nature of what the Upanishads have to say. And then the second thing, so it's that's only Shravana, so now I see what the Upanishads are saying. But then my mind needs to be proved. And that means all of the doubts around how that could be so. How can it be so? That kind of thing. That's not exactly, you can call it a doubt. It is a doubt because you don't know how it could be so. How could this little thing that's being said, how is that, how can that be true? That requires logic because you've seen it, but you can't just, but the mind won't just take your experience, you know. It has to understand it also. And so that is mananam. The mananam has to do with understanding how what the Shastra is saying is true, is plausible. How that identity is plausible, you know. And then also it has to look at all of the other darshanas that are contradicting that and say why that is not plausible, why that won't work. Why isn't this world made of just a bunch of tiny atoms? Indivisible atoms. So we really have to go into all of those things. Going into all of that, dismissing what differs from the vision and establishing logically what the vision says, that is necessary for what we call knowledge. Remember knowledge, even in the world, there's three words for it. The anubhava, yukti, and the pramana. And for us, in terms of Vedanta, it's Shruti. The Shruti, the Upanishads are the Pramana. Yukti is the logic. Anubhava is the experience, the recognition. You are here, your being is here already, completely experienced, but you superimpose, because of self-ignorance, you superimpose your self-experience on these upadis. It's not that the experience that I'm not here. I am here, and when I recognize myself, I'll say, oh, this is who I've always been. I've always been free. This is me. This is the me that I've always, always been. It is completely known to me. I had just been wearing all of these dresses because of all of these upadis, because of self-ignorance. So the anubhava is there. The experience of the world is here. The body, mind, sense organs is here to be analyzed. You know, all of these things are here. They're always already our experience. So the Shastra with this Mahavakya will take you to the recognition of myself as the one non-dual being of the whole creation and of all beings. It will take you to that. But the manana has to, the yukti, right, has to satisfy my mind, not somebody else's mind. So we think that just yukti, okay, here's some logic. It's not that simple. It's that your particular doubts need to be satisfied by your mind. And the teacher can really help with that, and does help with that, by bringing up all of these different yuktis, all of these different logics, and taking you step by step by step until your mind resolves that doubt. But your mind has to resolve the doubt. Right? So here, so it says, by these vakyas, the anusandhanam. Anusandhanam means the analysis or the inquiry into the meaning. Artha means meaning. Into the meaning of that, of the Mahavakya, and everything that leads up to it. So when you think Mahavakya, don't just think Tattvamasi. There's a lot of things that have to be explained to understand Tattvamasi. So in this manner, the analysis, the inquiry into the meaning of the Mahavakyas, what, by all of these Vakyas that we've just been looking at, by all of the Vakyas, that is called Shravana. Okay? So the meaning of the Mahavakya by means of all of the Vakyas, that is called Shravanam. Then he gives manana. Yuktya means by logic. Sambhavitattva, the possibility, the anusandhanam. So the anusandhanam, the inquiry into the plausibility of by means of yukti. Of what? Of those Vakyas, of the aikyata. The aikyatvam, the oneness, the oneness of my own being, you know, the oneness of myself in terms of this whole creation. The plausibility of that, it's unfolded by the Mahavakya. I see it, I understand it, but my mind needs to have a lot of logical backup. Whatever logical backup it needs, it has to have that. Because otherwise, there's not the mind is not resting in that knowledge. It's just, you know, it's kind of similar to the manas and did I lock my door example. Yeah. I mean, it's so silly, right? But I walk down the stairs and I don't remember if I locked my door. And unless I have some logic and I remember that I locked it, and there's something that convinces me that I locked my door, you know, I can't move. I have to go back and redo the whole thing and check it again. You can't move. You can't move on that doubt. Because unless you can do it, so, oh, it doesn't matter. I don't know if I locked it or not. I'm going to go anyway. Who cares? This, no problem. Nobody's going to steal. You know? But if it is a problem, you need either a secure remembrance or some, you know, and some type of memory or something that convinces you that you locked your door, right? And then you remember, I locked my door, yeah, I locked my door, and then you can go on. It's not a quite perfect analogy, but I'm just talking about the simplicity of it, you know? Your mind has seen something, it's recognized something, it all seems very clear until you walk out the door, you know? I think I told you that story of when, you know, when Swamiji would teach and we'd, most of us, our minds would just be blown, and we have seen it so clearly, you would never think that you could forget until you walk out the door and take a few steps, and your mind's like, oh. Remember when I said someday I'm going to make it to my room? And one day I did make it to my room. But it's not just about, you know, the teacher taking you to an experience, a recognition, you know. The mind there's a lot of work to do in terms of owning up that recognition. You know, so that's why both Shravana and Manana are necessary. So he says, Mananam tutat. That is what we call Manana. It's the inquiry into the plausibility by means of logic of the knowledge of the Mahavakyas. Okay. So let's do the next one.
Tabhyam nirvichikitsete
cetasastapitasya yat.
Cetasastapitasya yat.
Ekatanatvametaddhi.
Ekatanatvametaddhi.
Nididhyasanamuchyate.
Nididhyasanamuchyate.
Tabhyam. Nirvichikitse. Arte. Chetasaha. Stapitasya.
Stapitasya.
Yet.
Yet.
Ekatanatvam.
Ekatanatvam.
Etat.
Etat.
Hi.
Hi.
That's a big sandhi. Etat hi. From etat di. Etat hi. Niridhyasanam.
Uchyate.
So now, having defined Shravana and Manana, he's going to define Nididhyasana in a few verses. So what he says is, Tabhyam means by these two, Shravana and Manana. Tabhyam, by these two, which two? Shravana and Manana. Nirvichikitse arate. When the vishya, when the meaning or the thing that is meant to be known as the artha. So the artha, like the meaning of the word, is called an artha. Or here, what is the pramana trying to reveal? What is its vishya? What is its subject matter? What it is trying to make you know? That's the artha. So it says, when the artha, which in this case is Brahman or the Mahavakya, when the artha nirvichikitse is free from vichikitsa. Vichikitsa means doubt, samshaya. So when it is free from any type of doubt, it has clarity. So when there's clarity about my own nature, about me, okay? How? By means of Shravana and Manana. So when that self-knowledge is there, that clarity is there, then cetasaha stapitasya. So so going to the next line. Ekatanatvam. Eka means one. Ekatanatvam, ekatana. It means the state of flowing into oneness. The flowing into oneness of what? Of the mind, cetasaha, genitive, cetasaha, of the mind, which is stapitasya, which has become firmly placed on. Stapita is a causal. So of the mind, which has been firmly placed on, firmly directed toward, this is a dhadana, really, in the Yoga Sutras, which is firmly directed to, firmly placed on the artha. What is the artha? Is Brahman, the nature of the self, which has been made free of doubt, which is now near vichikitsa, without any doubt, due to the shravana and manana. Now, this is something different in terms of meditation, what meditation is for. What the Vedanta says about meditation is quite a bit different than what a lot of different spiritual disciplines say. We usually think that meditation is meant to achieve that understanding of the self or that experience of the self. We meditate so that we can know the self, so that we can gain the knowledge of the self. Like even some schools of Vedanta, and of course yoga is very much like this, where the Sankhya, the whole philosophy of the Sankhya system uses yoga in order to experience that samadhi, which differentiates completely the state of the purusha from the prakriti. They use the Ashtanga yoga in order to reach that state of samadhi. You study first so that you really understand what the Sankhya is saying, and then you meditate in order to have an experience, right? That's not quite as bad, it's not bad, I don't mean that, but what I meant by that, at least they know what they're looking for. They know what they're trying to have an experience of. Whereas in the West, anyway, you're meditating in order to have an experience that you have no idea that's going to be. But if we meditate, we're going to somehow, something will happen. So that's what I meant. Okay, so, but here in the Vedanta, you are contemplating upon something that you know already. You know from your Shravana and Manana. The self has already been recognized. It's already been differentiated. You know it clearly. And so now you're contemplating on that. In fact, we do Nitta Dhyasana as the knowledge is taking place. We do it while the knowledge is taking place. But in the end, you know, the idea is this. You have this knowledge. You see it. Because the Vedanta is a pramana. It's not like reading a book and then going trying to have the experience. You recognize it at the time of teaching, you know. And then doubts are removed from the manana, so you have that clarity. But you have still what we call viparita bhavana. Viparita bhavana means that, bhavana means that, is that experience, you experience the opposite of what the Shastra is saying. You have this knowledge, you know yourself, but you find you still have raga dvesha. You still have all of these likes and dislikes, these binding likes and dislikes. You still identify with this body, mind, sense organs in, not as mitya, because honestly, like you have, say you gain knowledge, you have clarity, you've done Nitta Dhyasana, there's no problem. You still identify with this body. Poor body. You know? Mm-hmm. We have to remember satyam mitya. In this teaching, satyam mitya is essential. So what that means is that this body becomes mitya to you, but that doesn't mean that the sukshma sharira is the subtle body is not there, and the sense of touch is not pervading the physical body, and so the physical body has its own sense of being a conscious being. Even when you know, even when you can differentiate your own being, you know? Like if I hold a flashlight up into the mirror, you know, the flashlight is going to reflect its light in the mirror. It doesn't make any difference whether you know what's really going on there or not. The mirror will reflect the light. That's how it is. You say, oh, but when I know what's really happening, it shouldn't be reflecting the light. No, it will reflect. The same way here. As long as I have this body, say you have knowledge and you're jnani and everything is fine, no problem. But you still have this body because of the prarabdha karma. The prarabdha karma means this body belongs to Ishvara, really. It's in this vyavahara, it's in this empirical shared reality. It's not it's not an imaginal body that when you, like an imaginal snake and the rope. When you gain the knowledge of the rope, this snake, which is what we call pratibhasika, it's just a projection of your own mind, goes away. This universe and this body, mind, sense organs is not a projection of your mind. It's Ishwara's mind. It's Ishwara's, it belongs to Ishvara. And so when you gain self-knowledge, this body, mind, sense organs, kariya karana sangata, this cause and effect, this, the sukshma sharira, the physical body, the karana sharira, it has a time, it's going to last for some time until that prarabdha runs out. So that will be the same, the prarabdha will be the same, it's not like you gain knowledge and everything becomes nice. No, it becomes just exactly what it was going to be. It just keeps on going with all of its problems and things. But what is very different is because you have knowledge, the way you handle that, the way you are with that, you know, the raga dveshas become non-binding desires. You have the constancy of your own being, which is not subject to any of this. So that wonderful sanctuary is always there. You understand Ishwara, you let the creation unfold, you're not frantic about what's going to happen to me tomorrow, you know. That all drops off. That's all Ajnanam born in terms of how I respond, you know, how I respond to the creation, how I respond to my experiences, how I respond to my mind, you know, how I am toward the inner and outer experiences. That completely changes because my knowledge is now different. My relationship with myself is now different. But that doesn't mean that the body, mind, sense organs fall away. They don't fall away at all until the prarabdha runs out. And then this body drops, the six goes back to its elements, the subtle body goes back to its elements, and I'm just abide really as Ishwara, as Brahman Mandasmaya Upadhi. That's what it is. But when I gain this knowledge, and as I gain and mature into clarity, some clarity where I really don't have any doubts, there is still what we call an emotional lag time. That emotional lag time means I have, you know, some inner work that has to be done. I have the little ones inside. I have traumas and things that I have to work with to the point of those traumas and those little ones being held by me, by the self, by the buddhi, in such a way that even though there's this hurt and that hurt, it's still, they're still held by me, you know. It's not like all the little ones inside or all of some of the bigger traumas inside. It's not like everything disappears. At least you still have memory of it. It doesn't all go away, but it loses its intensity. Your raga dvesha, you know what I mean? It loses the intensity, so it's not governing you. You can be with them like you'd be with people on the outside. You can be with these people on the inside, and they've calmed down so much because they've found that what I call that inner friend, or that inner friend is so important to the little ones and even to how you handle your own mind. If that inner friend isn't there, it's a very kind of isolated, lonely interior. You know, it's like living in a really unfriendly home, as opposed to living in a wonderful home where there's love and people caring about each other. You, as that inner friend, or as the buddhi that has knowledge, provides that loving home for all of the parts internally. That's why, you know, you learn this. One of the first things that, at least for some of us teaching, it's one of the first things that is taught, because even without self-knowledge, I even teach that to all of my clients. And for all of them, over the several years, you know, when we do an analysis, when they're ready to leave and we're terminating, that is always, always one of the most important things that they got. And even when I look back at all the years of Swamiji, for me, that is so fundamental, because it was that learning about that inner friend and how to create that loving inner space that gives you so much shanti that is not there without it, even though it's all completely relative, you know. And so being able to have that kind of understanding and kindness, it's like somebody loves me. At least there's somebody in there that loves me and cares. You know, that creates so much shanti. So these things are very important, but there is still an emotional lag time, even in terms of, you know, your desires. I need this to be happy. I need things like this to be happy. It's kind of shocking how long it takes for all of that to sort itself out. and even how long it takes for you to be, what's the saying, but to be patient with the little ones inside and with the complexes or with my limitations or whatever, to have some patience. You know, I mean, this is the West. We're supposed to have everything immediate gratification. And that's just not real. Even if you take drugs, the gratification is not really very good. It only lasts for a little while. and it leaves you in a damaged state. But what can you do? Best, very best thing is to be an inner friend, be like a good mother and father. Be like a good mother, a good father. Because to me that means they love you and they take you step by step, no matter how bad you are, crying and making a fuss and wanting this and wanting that and stamping your feet and all of these things. You know, and the mother's just there. It's all right, honey. It's all right. You have to have that good mother inside. And that gives so much strength to the child. Because that's almost like the Atma. The good mother father is like the self. They're just there. They love you. No matter what. If there's only in these situations, then that's not a good enough mother. Only in this case, I love you?
No.
That doesn't work. That's very damaging. But that's also abnormal on the part of the parents. They're not well. Because parents aren't selective like that, you know. I love you. There's not a better baby than you. You are the very best baby in the world. You're the cutest baby in the world. I've never seen a cuter baby than you. Mm-hmm. I love you. That's it. That's the end of it. That's all. They grow up in that, and they have that inner friend inside. The mother is a good example. Loving mother, father is a really good example. Good example of the inner friend. Because it's like the Atma, you know, it's not subject, it's not a variable. That's such a beautiful thing, and those children grow up with a strong sense of self, a strong sense of being wanted, strong sense of being loved. You know, all of these things, they don't think about it. They don't walk around saying, oh, I have such a strong sense of being wanted. I really feel loved all the time. They don't even think about it. They just have that inner structure, you know. The good news is that for those of us who didn't get that inner structure quite the way that would have been ideal, if you're patient and invoke that inner friend so that you have that inner environment, that inner structure really heals itself quite a bit. And so this takes time, you know. And desires drop off as you become more and more full with your knowledge, with resting in yourself. The more these desires drop off that are so subtle, some of them, you're just shocked that another one has come. You know, they're subtle, little subtle desires. All the big ones drop off really quickly, but there's all these subtle little things, you know, that just little tweakings. But they're desires, actually, you know. And they also become mitya. But until that happens, this nididhyasana is what we use really for this viparita bhavana. Viparita bhavana really, it means that besides the taking myself to be the upadis, which is the body, mind, sense organs, that's viparita, that's the opposite. You know, it's also with the practice of nididhyasana, that drops off, but it drops off because I'm sitting with myself. My mind, my buddhi, is getting to really sit with me and recognize myself as the most beloved, that nothing compares to it. It's not like a big bliss vritti, it's not that. It's just my own nature is all that I really want. You know? I think that I can get that from fulfilling all of these desires, you know. But we never do, of course. You get just hardly anything that even compares with just a little shantavritti, as though that's a big deal. It isn't. The shantavrittis come and go, and they're nice, and they're better than dukkavrittis. But they're still come and go. Your being, which is everything you've ever wanted to be, doesn't come and go. And so as the mind spins, gets to know you more, right? Instead of projecting you, gets to be just with you more in nididhyasana, then this viparita bhavana, this state of identifying with the opposite, these drop off. The raga dveshas drop off. And so as raga likes and dislikes don't drop off, the binding desires, that binding nature drops off. If your likes and dislikes or your desires all dropped off, you wouldn't even be able to move. Like, what's going to make me move now? I have to think about something. I have to decide I want to get up and go outside. I have to do something. Why would I do it? Because I want to. Yeah. So you can't, it's really a problem when we think about desires as though desires are bad. Desires aren't bad. In fact, the Prarabdha Karma itself, in the Swecha, your own desires that rise up, is what keeps one of the three things that keep you moving through your karma. So either your own desire comes up, or somebody else calls you and gets you to come into some situation, anyecha it's called, or the universe itself, anicca, it's not desired by anybody, but there's a volcanic eruption. Mm-hmm. Who wanted that? Maybe some scientist wanted it once from the distance. I don't know. Anyway, nobody asked for that. But that's still in your prarabdha. It's all Bhagavan, you know. So it's really important to kind of honor your desires and see if that's the thing you really want to do, especially when they're bigger desires, to kind of go with it. If it seems like it's you, it belongs to you, you know. But it should be non-binding. Because if it seems so real, let's see what happens. Let's see what happens with it. And if it doesn't work out, okay, it doesn't matter. It's not like my ananda is at stake. But that's a very different attitude than trying to, you know, decide to be a spiritual person. We shouldn't have any desires. The problem with that is it's really not true. As you can try to decide not to have any desires, but it's not going to happen. And so then you're going to be really disappointed with your moksha. What I thought moksha was did not happen. Never happened. Awful. Okay. So, this ekatanatvam, this for the nididhyasana, it's really when I'm practicing meditation and I'm letting my buddhi, just the vrittis, kind of just focus, flow into my own being. Like sometimes in meditation, I'll say, you know, just focus on yourself, gently focus on yourself, and as your mind wanders off, just bring it back. That's the ekatanatvam. It's not like, okay, I'm going to focus only on myself, and that's just going to continually happen until I tell it not to. You know, that's really not true. You can have different lengths of time that the mind focuses and is yourself, focuses on yourself, is identified with yourself, all of these things. But that's time-bound and the mind can get distracted and you just simply bring it back. Otherwise, that's another problem. Oh, my mind, that's supposed to focus on myself and it just only does it for a little while and then it comes out and does other things. Swamiji will say, that is the mind, that's what the mind does. The mind does this, it focuses there, goes there, and then you just bring it back. Just bring it back to yourself. Okay? Okay, let's at least read this next one. It's more on nididhyasana.
Jnana parityajya kramadyeyaika gocharam
kramadyeyaika gocharam
Nivatadipavacittam
Samadhir abhidhyate.
Now he's making it. Let me read this first. I'll tell you. Yatra
jnane
parityajya
kramat
jaya
eka
gocharam
nivata
deepavat
chittam
samadhihi
abhidhiyate.
So now he's defining samadhi. What he says is when you start out doing Nitta Dhyasana and the mind, and so you've quietened, you've relaxed your body, you've quietened your mind, maybe you've done some japa, but the mind has some certain amount of shanti, you've done that preparatory work. And then with Nitta Dhyasana, you turn the mind, focus the mind just on your own being. Now, when you do that, at that time, there's still what they call, if you look here, jatra dhyana. That's a dvandva. Jatra dhyane is a dvandva. There's still the meditator, the jatra, and dhyana, the meditation. So the meditator and the meditation are both there. So what he says, and also then the thing that you're meditating on is there, the dhyayam, the thing that you're meditating on, this triputi, this group of three, are there initially. So he says, parityajya, when the meditator and the meditating are drop off, but it, when they're abandoned, when they're given up, then what? And kramat means gradually, so you're keeping your mind focused on yourself, just on your being. And what happens after some time, kramat, gradually, the meditator and the meditating drop off, and he says, dhyaya eka gocharam. Dhyaya means that which is being meditated on, which is only one. Gocharam means that which is the object of the vritti. And in this case, say you're meditating and you have vritti, or you have a stream of vrittis, thought modifications that are all focused on yourself. And each vritti then has for its content the self, because that's what it's focused on. So there's like an anuvritti, a stream of similar thoughts, similar vrittis going to, taking the content of myself, self, 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 like that. But for some time, even though the self is the content, the vishya, the artha of the vritti, right? Still, and it is only one, it's only one self, still, for some time, there still is the recognition of myself, the meditator, the act of meditating, and the object of meditation, which is the Atma, right? So all three are still there. We call that Savikalpa Samadhi, because the mind is still only focused on my being. It doesn't have any other, it's not objectifying anything else. So, or it's not flitting around saying now it's objectifying this and this and this. No, it's only objectifying. Objectifying meaning, by objectify meaning I become the content of the vritti, of the buddhi vritti. And those buddhi vrittis are, well, have an anuvritti, one after another, after another, after another, just going to myself. But initially and for some time, I'm aware of myself meditating, right? And so this triputi of the meditator, the meditating, and the object of meditation are still there. But if this ekatanatvam means the state of the vrittis going in like in a pravaha, means like a stream. They're going like a stream into myself. If that's held for some time, the meditator and the meditating drop off experientially, and the only thing that is left is me, is conscious being, without the duality of a meditator and meditating. The example they use, so that's really just a non-dual samadhi. At first it's Savikalpa Samadhi, because there's a recognition of the meditator, the meditating, and the object of meditation. But when those first two drop off, then there's just only the object of meditation, which is consciousness, which is Brahman, which is myself. The example they use for that in the Shastra is holding a candle flame up to the sun. If I hold a candle flame up to the sun, initially for just a small period of time, you'll see the candle flame and the outline of the flame with the sun background. You're holding it right up to the sun, and then you see for a moment, you'll see that flame, the outline of the flame. But the flame, the fire and the sun are the same. So what happens is that the sun overwhelms the fire of the flame. And so the outline disappears. That's called Nirvikalpa Samadhi. So even though the flame is still there with its outline, it's not perceivable because it's overwhelmed, because that is overwhelmed by the content of the self. And so we say at that time, that's called nirvikalpa samadhi. There's no subject-object differentiation from your in terms of your own experience. You're just abiding as Brahman, just as Satchitatma, as the Satchitananda Atma. That's how you're abiding. There's no subject-object differentiation. even though there is an atisukshma vritti there. Atisukshma. Sukshma means subtle. Atisukshma means very subtle. There's a very subtle vritti there that has only overwhelming content of your own being. It's so subtle that you can't differentiate it from the self, because the content of the vritti is my own self, right? And so this flame, which is really still like nama rupa, the flame has no being really apart from the flame. The shape, the rupa has no being apart from the flame. And so when the flame and the sun are the same, that rupa as though disappears, but it's still there. That's what we call atisukshma. So now that's called nirvikalpa samadhi. As long as the flame is there, it's avikalpa. There's a vikalpa. Vikalpa means a difference, subject-object differentiation. So here, he gives an example for this. He says, nivata dipavat chittam. The mind becomes just like a nivata means free of wind, like a dipa, like a candle. That's a lit candle, a dipa. That is nivata. There's no wind blowing. And so it's just completely still. Right? And he says, samadhihi, like the mind, which is like a windless flame, right, is called samadhi. Samadhihi abhidhiyate. Okay, so. Okay, good. We have a couple more verses on nirvikalpa samadhi. So let's do it next class.
Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.
I thought it was sent. Yeah, they kept that.